Well, about 12 years ago, we did a long-range plan for the church and included a vision for our building and our facilities. One of our architects in St. Luke's who grew up here as a child and has always appreciated the buildings. In fact, this room, some of you might not know, was designed by a well-known Chicago architect and very unique for that time in which it was designed in the 60s. Architectural students would come from around the Midwest and beyond to study this space and how unique it is and some of the symbols in it that we don't have time to go through that now. But we looked at all of the immediate needs that the church had at the time and then looked ahead to say, what can we forecast and imagine there might be in the future down the road? Well, this was so comprehensive and financially very large, we felt like there's no way we can do this much right now. But here's what we did do. We started taking chunks of this overall building campaign and pulling out pieces to say, okay, what are things we might be able to do with just individuals willing to give for this purpose, to raise money quietly, never having to do a big campaign? Listen to some of the stuff that we have done in the last 12 years. Upgrades to our parking lot with improved lighting, improved our west passage out here. Some of you who remember back in the day, it was a brown VC tile flooring and there wasn't that much lighting. There's been a lot of upgrade out there. Renovated Great Hall, including a new commercial kitchen, created the children's auditorium room. We upfitted this room to better serve the needs of the contemporary service. Improved technology throughout the building, new lighting in our sanctuary. We renovated the parlor into the community center, renovated the spiritual life center right through those doors, reconstructed our office area, and of course, the renovations of old Broad Ripple United Methodist Church into St. Luke's Midtown. This is probably well over $10 million that we did without ever having to do a major campaign. Just individuals being willing to commit. So today, we're starting a new series that is a building campaign. I've been able to get away with 13 years without having to do a building campaign. And the leaders of the church said, now it's your turn, Rob. What we've done is gone back to our original plan that we had. And we've said, okay, what haven't we addressed that we need to? Not just want to, need to. And there are some several needs in that. There's security in our children's area that we've got to address. Security out in the lodge. The oldest parts of our building that are costing us the most to maintain. How do we make better use of the spaces? How do we just upgrade the appearance of a lot of our facilities? So we're looking at a significant campaign, and that's what these 3 weeks are going to be about. We're calling this Making Room. A great video has been put together that talks about the reason why we make the case for it, but it also gives you a little bit of a hint as to what this might look like and what some of the changes and renovations will mean for us. So let's take a look at the video.
This building is open 7 days a week, often from 6:30 a.m. to almost 11:30 p.m. You have people in and out all the time. The Master Gardeners class is here, the Civic Women's Group is here, AA is here. 1,200 people join us online every month, and those people are growing in number in the ways we connect, and it is powerful community that's happening.
I know that we have a hard time finding room for everybody. And for me, that's a good problem to have.
Our diaper pantry is growing at an exponential rate. And it's not just diapers that we provide. We need space for our families to meet, to gather, to feel comfortable.
The Children's Ministry of St. Luke's is very important because our world is so different. And it's wonderful that the kids have a foundation.
So one of the things that me and my wife looked for was a church where we knew our daughter would be safe. That they could go, they could have this experience learning about God, but in a very safe environment.
If they have kids with special needs,
Where's a safe place where I can take my kid, where they can learn about Jesus, but an environment that suits them? Well, we've got that with our Mosaic, but we need more room in the inn, and so that's part of our capital campaign to make that happen.
So this idea is, how do we make room for more people to gather, more community service, more lives touched by hope, more lives transformed into service that empower and impact people in our community?
This capital campaign is a big campaign. We're looking for a lot of money, and it takes a lot of people. It's going to take a lot of commitment from the people at St. Luke's to actually make this happen. Now, luckily, we have a lot of really committed people here. We can see where the future is taking us to, and we're going to be ready for it.
If you have any connection to St. Luke's, you are part of a community that helps people give and receive hope every single day. By giving to the campaign, you are ensuring that that continues into the future.
Making room.
For the community.
For you.
For my family.
For those who need us.
For the future.
So that's a little taste of what the campaign will mean. And if you want to get a better taste of it, a better look at what's being planned, and have a chance to ask questions after this service, at 1215, just to your left down the hallway, in N101, room N101, Nancy Lang and Steve Langton are going to be down there to give you a tour of what is in the Making Room campaign. They would love to talk with you and share more, answer any questions you have. So I hope you'll go down there. If you're on our mailing list, you're going to be receiving some information soon that will include, if you would like to participate, to make a pledge that would be over 3 years. So it'd be a 3-year pledge that you make. And I'm really excited that in that big dollar amount you saw a moment ago, lead gifts have already been made in our congregation up to 2/3 of that amount. Over $4 million, it's already been committed. So we're just a little over $2 million away, and we're opening this up to everyone in the church. So you're going to receive information about that. Last Sunday, after the service, right outside the doors, a gentleman came up and introduced himself to me, and it was his first Sunday. And he acknowledged that he really was not looking for a large church like St. Luke's. He was ideally looking for a smaller congregation. And he shared some frustrations in churches he had visited. He didn't name which churches. He just said, I was looking at smaller congregations that advertised being welcoming, wanting visitors, wanting new people. But he said, church after church, what I found was they said they wanted to have new people, but they weren't willing to change anything to really make new people feel welcome and a part of the church, and that it was getting frustrating. Well, I drove home and just kind of replaying his conversation. I was thinking about this campaign starting this week. I was also thinking about what I hear from a lot of colleagues of mine, pastors, and their frustrations in their churches. And I thought about this contrast between physical space and spiritual space. And that many of the churches who already have the most room to grow, the most room available, have gotten that way because they've had shrinking space going on right here. They've had shrinking space to do what it takes to welcome new people, to draw new people. And if you don't have a heart to really welcome folks, if you don't make space for people here, then it's kind of useless to talk about making room out here. The first construction project in the Gospels happened in a home in Galilee. The Bible says the Spirit of God was upon Jesus to heal people. And so many people showed up to experience or maybe just to watch this take place that it says that you couldn't even open the door in the house. It was that crowded. Some people came who carried a friend of theirs there, a paralytic. He couldn't walk. And when they got there, they realized we can't even see Jesus. We can't get our friend close to Jesus. But now these are the kind of friends you want to have in a crisis. because they are not easily deterred. They climbed up on the roof, they hoisted the friend up there, and they started digging a hole. Remember, a lot of homes were thatched roofs, branches sometimes, but also with packed mud, almost like blocks. They could be that thick and heavy. So, you know, they're going to be breaking through dirt. Dirt's going to start falling in, and they make a hole that is big enough to lower a stretcher. It had to be a considerable size hole so that the person ends up right at the feet of Jesus. Now, this story is told in three of the four Gospels, which says that in the early church, they found this story very, very meaningful. That it says, we believe this story is a church that has a lot to say about what it means to be church. So what does it mean? Well, one of the obvious things you take away from this story right off the bat is that these friends cared. I mean, they had to. They lugged their paralytic friend who knows how far just to get to this home, and then they quickly found a way to get to Jesus that meant hoisting him up. I'm sure at this point, the friend on the paralytic was probably thinking, hey guys, it's okay, just take me home. I don't like this. I'm being lifted up on the roof now. It's okay, let's just go home. No, 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 we're not quitting now. And they get up on the roof, they make a hole, they lower him down there. What is the Bible? What are the gospel writers saying that this is what it means to be church? That we care about making room for people to get to the source of the one who can make life whole, the one who can heal us, the one who can help us. It's a message to the church to be a place to not let their buildings become limitations to welcoming people, but to see their buildings as opportunities to extend a wider welcome. A few years ago, our trustees, the group in our church in charge of maintaining our facilities, became aware that we have folks coming into our church who do not identify as male or female. And that caused them to start evaluating our property. And how well does our property communicate a welcome to these people? And so they made a decision to invest what actually ended up being a fair amount of money to renovate the restrooms just down the west passage here in front of door 6, which is our busiest entrance. Throughout the week, that's where the majority of people who come into this church, whether it's for a church event or a community event, that's one of the first things they see. And they rebuilt all of those restrooms so that we have gender-neutral restrooms. Now, there were some people who felt like, we are just following the influence of liberal politics. We're just trying to be woke. But in actuality, what we were doing was listening to people in our church, especially parents, who said, my child is transgender. Do you know how hard it is to get my child to want to go anywhere near a church, much less in one? Thank you. Because when our child walks in this building, one of the first things they see is that you've made room for my child. You've said we care about you. It's important to think about how does our space communicate our value. Down at Midtown, they have to do their fellowship time on Sundays on the level below the sanctuary. That's where the fellowship hall is located, so it's a downstairs room. Now, the great thing about Midtown is you can get there by elevator. The not so good thing is, once you get off the elevator at the lower level, you've still got several more steps to go, as you can see here, to get to the donuts and the coffee. So Pastor Mindy and the leaders of Midtown began to evaluate this and said, you know, what about people, if they can't walk the stairs to get down here, how are they going to walk these stairs? And there's another level. What do we need to do about this? And they talked about it, they debated, they designed things, they thought, they kind of fretted a little bit over what we're going to do, how much is it going to cost. And then one of the girls in the Midtown community broke her leg. Maybe it was at school or some kind of accident, but she broke her leg. She came to church and got to the lower level on the elevator, but she couldn't manage these extra steps. And so she couldn't, like, go do her favorite thing on Sunday, which was get donuts and visit with my friends. Well, all of a sudden, the church stopped stewing about it. They stopped, like, debate, what are we going to do? And the next thing you know, they built a ramp so that now this girl can easily get down to the fellowship hall for offerings. Anybody else can get down this ramp and have full access. In other words, when someone they knew, someone they loved, had something they needed to experience full community, the church didn't spend a lot of time thinking about it. They acted. What's the lesson in this gospel for the church? What if we look at everybody as one of our own? What if we look at every child as one of our children? Every new person as a brother and sister? And we just think, what do we need to do to welcome them well, provide a space? You know, these friends who dug a hole in the roof to lower their paralytic friend, it doesn't look like they did a lot of debate. I mean, it doesn't look like they were slow about this. Like they were kind of deliberating, like, okay, wait, before we do this thing, let's get a piece of paper. And let's draw a design. Let's see if anybody in there might be an architect. Maybe they can help. Which ones are the load-bearing walls? Let's make sure we don't do anything structurally wrong. I mean, I don't think they did any of that. They just climbed up there and said, we got to dig a hole because our friend is here now and Jesus is here now and we can't wait. Let's get to it. And they made it happen. This is what the church looks like. When it recognizes that our real value is the people. You know, there are churches that value their properties as they should. Every church should. We don't not value our buildings. Problem becomes when you value buildings more than people. I've been in churches where they have really nice looking signs. Really nice looking signs that say, no drink or food allowed in this space. I've been in churches where they make sure that the children's directors know where the kids are not allowed. They are not allowed in these spaces because they might spill on the carpet, they might dirty the paint on the wall, because we won't take care of our property. And I've been in churches where trustees say things like, well, you know what we do? We just plan it in our budget. Every few years, we're going to replace the carpet and we're going to paint the walls because we want our church looking nice. But we recognize that we also want it to get messed up. We want both. We want it looking good and we want it dirty because that's why we built it, so that it's going to get used. And we just have to do a little more to keep it looking fresh, because when we spend money on carpet and paint, we're investing in souls. We're investing in people. And that's the value. In Webster's dictionary, the word hospitality is between the word hospice, which means shelter, and hospital, which means place of healing. Hospitality is not just making space and being polite. It's a spiritual word. It means we provide a place where people become more whole, and that happens in community. That's how God does that. God heals us, God helps us, God makes us better in community together. We need each other for this. When we make room for people, we don't say, see, we made space for you, hang out. No, we get together and we say, we connect. We get to know each other. John Ortberg has a wonderful line in one of his writings in which he says, you can only be loved to the extent that you are known. Think about that. You can only be loved to the extent that you are known. If we make room so that people can feel loved, then we've got to make room so that people can be known, that we can know them. So today we are issuing for the rest of the month of September the Yellow Bench Challenge. When we started this campaign for raising money for a building, I could get on board with all of the reasons why, the security needs, the things that we would like to make look better. I can get on board with that. But I really just couldn't get excited about just raising money for a building. I wanted to think, what could this mean for our congregation? What could be another value? And so we came up with the idea of the Yellow Bench Challenge. Now, we've got a couple of people who are going to come and demonstrate to us what this challenge looks like.
Do you mind if I have a seat?
Help yourself.
Oh, awesome. Thanks.
Well, hello. I'm Gustavo.
Hi, I'm James.
Hi, James.
Nice to meet you.
What brings you here to St. Luke's?
Actually, I work here. I've been here since January, so yeah.
That's right. You're that fine young man that sung that song so wonderfully a couple Sundays ago.
Thank you. Thank you. There's actually a little bit of a backstory. Do you care if I share a little bit?
I love stories.
So what a lot of people don't know is that it had been 18 months since I had sung anywhere. And the reason for that is last year I was diagnosed with cancer. Mm. And they found a tumor in my abdomen the size of a football. And I ended up having to go through a ton of radiation and chemotherapy. And that then caused my left vocal cord to get paralyzed. So I lost my singing voice, and so I'm still rebuilding it.
Well, you're rebuilding wonderfully. It was beautiful. Guess what, James?
What?
We have something in common.
What's that?
2019, I had a cancerous tumor diagnosed on my left vocal cord. Yes, 3 rounds of chemo, 6 weeks of radiation. But this year, February, I was let free, cancer-free.
Yes.
Cancer-free.
That's awesome. So we're cancer buddies.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
We both have had cancer and both on the left vocal cord.
That's right. That's
Man.
Right.
And we also got to ring that bell.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, boom.
Ring that bell.
Now, that is their true story. In fact, Gustana told me this morning, she actually did not know the full details of that until they recorded this on Friday for the 9:30 service earlier this morning. They didn't even fully know that. So this literally was a place where they fully met. Here's how it works. If you come and sit on the yellow bench, what you are saying is, I'm okay to have a conversation with somebody. I'm okay. Yeah, come talk to me. If you see somebody sitting on the yellow bench, that's your invitation to go sit down and do something that's that easy. Hi, my name is. I've been coming here for. Where are you from? See if you find something that you might have in common. I might just finish the sermon here. It's pretty comfortable. Think about an interesting idea here, that when Jesus, after his resurrection, ascended into heaven, he did not leave behind a master plan for how to carry on his work. He did not leave an instruction manual. He did not leave resources to financially fund the mission. All he left were 12 people to care about each other and to care about people who aren't a part of the group. I mean, that was it. That was the master plan. And look what happened. We're still a part of that master plan. And carrying it out is as complicated as this: sitting on a bench and having a conversation. Think about one more piece to the story from the gospel. And I think this is perhaps the most important piece. Jesus did not heal their friend right away. He first said to the person, "Your sins are forgiven." Now, they didn't come asking for that. The friends didn't. The paralytic didn't. But that's what Jesus offered. He offered spiritual wholeness. And the religious leaders who were there looking for a chance to get at Jesus said, "You're committing blasphemy. By what authority do you have to forgive sins?" And Jesus just said to them, "The authority of the Son of God." Which is easier to say, "Your sins are forgiven," or to say to somebody who can't walk, "Rise, take up your mat and go home, so that you will know I have that authority"? He looked to the man and said, "Get up. Pick up your mat, because you're not going to ever need it again. Take it home and put it away." And probably for the first time in his life, he stood up. Now, here's the key. The story ends not there by saying, it ends by saying that all of the people present were amazed and said, "We've never seen anything like this before." Who got blessed? It wasn't just the paralytic. It wasn't just the friends. It was everybody. When people make room for others, they discover a blessing themselves. Don't you wish you could ask the owner of that home a question? I mean, imagine the end of the day, Jesus and the disciples leave, all of the people who were there go home, the house is empty, and the guy's standing in his living room and he's looking up. He's got a big hole up there and he's just staring at it. And you walk up next to him and you go, "You know, it's just us here, you can be honest with me. Does this perturb you a little bit?" Now, the man could say, "Yeah, it does. I mean, I'm really glad some people got helped today, but I got a hole to repair. This is going to cost money. Somebody's got to fix this." I don't believe he said that. I believe he would have stood there and said, "Perturbed? I'm thinking about just leaving the hole. I'm thinking about keeping it that way, because I don't ever want to forget what happened under my roof today. I don't ever want to forget this. This was amazing. I've never seen anything like this. I don't want to forget it because I got to be a part of it. I got to invest in it." I think he would have said something like that. I finished my sabbatical going to Dallas, Texas. I visited my colleague, friend Stan Copeland, who's senior pastor of Lovers Lane United Methodist Church there in Dallas. That week, First Baptist Church in downtown Dallas had a fire that destroyed their sanctuary. And that Sunday, the people were having to worship in the convention center. It's a big story in the Dallas Morning News. So that Sunday, Stan told a story in his sermon about the late, well-known senior pastor of the church, Dr. W.A. Criswell. Back when he was serving at the church, there was a period of time when apparently a young man named Tony, who was mentally and physically challenged, took a liking to Dr. Criswell. and he would flank him all the time. After the service, when they went back to his study, Tony would walk in and help take his robe off and put it on a hanger and put it in the closet, bring his coat, put it on Dr. Criswell. Whenever Dr. Criswell left his office, Tony would run in front of him and open the door for him. When he was going to the sanctuary to get ready for service, he would open every door for him. And people in the church were getting kind of uncomfortable with this. It's like making some, like, you know, TV personality out of their senior pastor. And they're like, he's just the senior pastor. I mean, come on, let's get real. So they went up to Tony and they said, Tony, we know you mean well, but, you know, we don't think Dr. Criswell needs you opening doors for him. We're just afraid that's going to start annoying Dr. Criswell. So Tony went to Dr. Criswell. He said, Dr. Criswell, am I bugging you? I don't want to be a nuisance. Dr. Criswell said, Tony, no, you're not bugging me. I so appreciate what you do for me. You keep doing as long as you want to. Well, they were in a building campaign, and they just finished a family life center that was across the street, and that's where they put the senior pastor's study, which meant that now every time Dr. Criswell would walk over to preach on Sunday mornings, there were that many more doors he had to go through. So Tony really had more of a job. He would open up all the doors for Dr. Criswell, and 2 weeks after that building opened, very unexpectedly, Tony died. And they had a funeral at the church, and Dr. Criswell preached. He said, stick with me here, people. But I have this wild idea that when we all die one day, that by God's good grace, we're all going to go to heaven. And when we get to the pearly gates, we're all going to make the same discovery, that the person there who opens the gate for every one of us will be Tony, welcoming us in. Why? Because when God's people make room for others that starts here, they will make room for themselves.